So this one's a tough one. Race is never easy to talk about. It's always uncomfortable, but such is life, and such is life in our society. So I'm just going to breathe and get through it, and I invite you along on a journey. So there's been a lot of talk about white supremacy and white privilege in Unitarian Universalist circles of late. In the larger world outside of the UU sphere, 45 is in the White House, and we have white supremacists out and about running amok, thinking this is now the halcyon era for them once again. Inside the UU world, we have President Peter Morales resigned, and two other members of the UUA Leadership Council have left. There have been accusations of white supremacist hiring practices and the use of coded language that serves to justify these practices. I keep hearing out in cyberspace and on our grounds, these are trying times in the UUA and in the wider UU world. These trying times were further inflamed by a letter written by Reverend Don Southworth to the UUA Board of Directors. And he was in our pulpit last weekend. And that invitation was extended a long time ago. And after reading his letter, I was, I would say as a black man, I was pissed. It struck me as rather tone deaf. It struck me as an exercise in a white supremacist practice of shutting down folks and opinions through policy and through he just gave me, I am older white male and what I say matters and it goes and don't question me. That's what I read there. That's what a lot of us in the UU world that have read his letter perceived. There was anger, shock, outrage, and it continues. And he has tried his best to control the narrative. Now, I met Reverend Don during my work on the Ministerial Fellowship Committee, found him to be a very interesting guy. We sat there, we interviewed candidates. I was like, you're pretty cool. However, the letter kind of changed that for me. And when I got here that Sunday, last Sunday, I really was shut down. It's the first time I've walked into Wilder Hall not wanting to hear anything that came from this space. I had had enough. Now, being non-white in a white supremacist environment is like swallowing a bitter horse pill every morning. Y'all know those pills, those big ones, like those Tylenol 3s. Okay. The ones that your grandmama talked about. It's big. You don't want to do it, but you have to. That's just part of your life. So you put it in your mouth, you try to swallow it down. Perhaps it gets stuck. You drink some water, you force it down, you choke it down, and it's there. You've gotten through that part of the day. However, on its way down, it left some reminders that it came through and you didn't want it. Your throat might be a little scratchy, you might feel like something's stuck back there. So maybe you gargle with something. Still there. You drink some water. Didn't move. Now, me personally, I like to chase it with some French fries. They coat your throat, okay? I figured it was like a nice plumber snake. It might, you know, get some water with the fries, get it out of there. No dice. And therein lies the danger. You're having to do something that you'd rather not do. You're compelled to think about something you'd rather not think about just to get through your day. There's discomfort and dis-ease in this. I've talked about dis-ease in this space, not disease, but dis-ease. That idea of I'm here, but something's not quite right, can't put my finger on it, and even once you do, you realize you can't do anything about it. That dis-ease. This coping with this bitter pill. For me, this is living as a black man in a world that centers white, Eurocentric, and Western notions of existence. Those of us in the margins deal with this bitter pill and a scratchy throat every single day.
Now, in preparing my thoughts for this morning, I kept reflecting on our congregation's desire and the denomination's great desire for greater diversity in our pews, in our chairs, in our leadership. And this led to thoughts about welcoming, because if you're trying to bring the outside in, you gotta welcome them. But the thing that emerged while I was in the shower getting all my ideas, that's where they come from, the shower. I'm a water baby. Welcome in, as opposed to welcome home, is a thing that pounded away at my brain the last 4 days. If we want to truly have a multicultural worship space and experience, we must be willing to give up some of those things that we've known or that we've always done. When I chose all of you as my spiritual family, like the folks did today, and when I chose this space as my spiritual home, I did so knowing that things would not be the same as the place that I came from. For example, call and response with the sermon, goodbye. Okay. An A and B selection from the choir, followed by the minister coming up to start the sermon, but reprising selection A or B, if not A and B, before getting into the sermon and possibly taking a break in the middle of that sermon to bring back B. Not happening here. The Amen Corner, now being chaired by Mr. Saulwasser. All right, we have our second member. I miss those brothers, I do. I couldn't be part of them. It wasn't a good fit. It never was a good fit. But I came here, and it did. But I recognize there was work I had to do to fit. But there was also work that had to be done here to welcome me. Now, those things that I talked about not being here, they're central elements of the worship experience for me. It's what I grew up with. Yet they do remain absent here, although we have a little, I appreciate that. Bring it back, gentlemen, bring it back. Now, you have to talk to Mitra so she doesn't look at you like, what in the world? She's probably heard it before, but just so she knows. Not just the babies are going to be screaming out in the middle of her sermon. But this idea of these things being absent, it brought the question for me, is this my spiritual home? I was welcomed in, but was I welcomed home? The question comes up because there's security in home. There's sacrifice. There's love. There's food to nourish you, to get through the day, to get through the week. We come here to get what we need on Sunday to get through Monday through Saturday. Some of us need more than others some weeks. Some of us are just here to give. However, when many Black UUs congregated in New Orleans in March, I believe, there are about 5 groups that they formed to discuss what is the most pressing issue for you as a Black UU. The number one topic picked by 4 out of those 5 groups was spiritual nurturing and depth. So that means that the homes that they have adopted and said, this is my spiritual home, these are my people, my family, I come to them every Sunday to get what I need to get through this life as a Black person in a white supremacist world. I'm not getting enough. And these are neophytes. These are religious professionals. These are lay leaders of note. You know these names out there. I'm not naming them, but you know these names. These are cradle UUs. These are people invested at the congregational, district, region, and denominational levels. They made choices to come in and to stay in, yet their spiritual homes have not nourished them. You might be asking, why did they stay? Now, I won't be so bold as to speak for all of them. However, for me,
I can speak for. I stay because I believe in the vision of Unitarian Universalism. Beloved community, it ain't easy. It's not easy at all. There are times I have left here hurt, disillusioned, angry, in tears. But I come back because this is home, and I'm going to make it my home. And I expect all of you to help me do that, because that's what we do here. And I also... It's not just a banner. I got two of them in the closet. And this was an intentional wardrobe decision. I'm going to respect the space with the blazer, but I'm coming with the t-shirt. Now, the work is not just taking place out there in the larger world. It must also take place in here. In here and in here. Our gaze cannot be exclusively outward, but must also be inward. In focusing outward and inward, our congregation has not been as attentive to marginalized voices in our own house. People of color visit us, and many do not return. I've met multiple transgender and gender nonconforming visitors who have not stuck around. They've liked it, but they've not stuck around, and I've wondered why. Now, from what I hear from these folks, not all, from some, and from the larger world, the invitation to come in was clear. However, they could not discern a fertile space with fertile soil to plant themselves in our beloved garden. What I will say to that is, whether it is mindful or unintended, we cannot, as congregations and as individuals, be those weeds that consume all the nutrients and all the air, such that the new flowers that are being planted have nothing with which to grow. We cannot be that. Following along that line, we cannot allow white privilege, white supremacy, colorism, sexism, patriarchy, misogyny, ageism, classism, ableism, imperialism, heterosexism, elitism, aristocracy, and colonialism to have any quarter in our spaces, in our hearts, and in our minds. We must. We have an imperative as Unitarian Universalists, we have an imperative as humans to rise up, to wake up and do the work. Now, it's not just up to non-white people to dismantle white supremacy, going back to our focus today. And it's not up to marginalized people to dismantle all the other isms, archies, and Asians in our world. Privilege, that which you have, must be a tool that we use to step away from systems that oppress others and affirm us. Privilege gives us an opportunity to look at these systems with new eyes, to disavow them, and to take a hammer and dismantle them, swing by swing, brick by brick, and uncomfortable moment by uncomfortable moment. I invite you, now I'm going to employ you, to wade into the discomfort that is everyday life for marginalized people. Jump in if that's your style, because I know there are some jumpers in the room. But beware, this life ain't easy. Not everyone can lead the charge. For those of you that are like, I'm not a big rabble-rouser, you don't have to lead the charge, but you got to get in. Got to get in. Because each of you has something special to offer to this ongoing struggle. And if we truly want to embrace our faith and our principles, we must get into the water. We must be willing to get wet. We must be willing to let some things rise up to the surface and float away from us. Those are the things we got to give up to do this work, to walk the talk that we put out there in the world. Now, folks in the center cannot speak for people in the margins.
That's a painful lesson that we've learned and we continue to learn. We must resist the lure of being saviors. For example, the work that I do with Interval House Crisis Shelters, I'm able to walk in as a man and I take my male privilege in there, and I even take my privilege as a black man and go out into the black community and black immigrant communities, and I talk to black men and black boys about, hey, brothers, we need to end this violence against women. We need to raise our sons to not see violence as an answer in dealing with the women in their lives. We need to raise our daughters to realize they can do whatever they want. And we need to check the men that are out there doing these things that we know about. It's not just their business. It's your business, too. It's your community. That's the work I do. However, I learned very early on, as a man walking into those spaces that have been dominated by women, I get a lot of credit and a lot of props. And I was a newbie. I had done nothing. That male privilege rang through for me, big time. And I realized there were meetings I needed to go into and just sit there and be quiet. And when I did have an opportunity to speak, I gave credit to all the women that came before me and the women that give me my marching orders. Because it's not just women's fight, but the men are Johnny come lately. The men are the ones doing the majority of the violence out there that's reported, so that's where the work is. So my voice as a man has some extra weight, but I cannot allow it to drown out the women that have done that work. They laid the foundation. I don't get to swoop in and be a savior. So I say to you as well, beware of that lure of doing what you thought was the right thing. Step back, see that space. Let those voices come out. We may not agree with what comes out, but they're there and they're valuable. And the stakes are too high. One of the things we realize, when marginalized folks engage with folks in positions of privilege, there's a lot of vulnerability there. They don't always articulate it, but if you're mindful of it, it's very clear. We've got to be very careful in the work we do in the wider world and in the work we do with one another. We're opening ourselves up to be devastated. And I've been devastated in this space before. But love brings me back every time. Now, we must be woke to the struggles not only around us, but within us. We must not turn back when it gets difficult. We must be willing to be outlaws, race traitors, and displaced from who we are and what we know, and also what we've known. It's difficult for me to imagine an egalitarian society. TV and film have tried, but they failed. I look at something like Star Trek. That was supposed to be the utopian vision, but it was still overwhelmingly white. Now, because I'm in a pulpit, I won't say exactly how I classified that. I'll just say it was an attempt that came up short. What it struck me as is a situation where they ran up to that water. They stuck a toe in and then retreated because the water wasn't comfortable enough. They were doing what is safe and acceptable because their desire to protect what is greater than the imperative they have to create what could become. Now, as you use, our principles make our imperative clear and compelling. An injustice anywhere is an injustice everywhere. So I implore you to go on and get wet, get in that water, get some in your eyes, feel the burn, let your hair get wet, let that look get a little thrown askew. You will change. And that water will get comfortable to you. And then when it's time to step out of it, to get back to who you are, the world might seem a bit cold when you step out. Think of it like a swimming pool. But when you get back in, it might be a little cold again, but it gets comfortable a little bit quicker each time. You've changed, right? So the experience of that water is going to change with each time. Awakening is the first step. Knowledge is next, action follows, and enlightenment is the holy grail. That's what we all seek, to do our part to live out our purpose in this life. So I ask you to continue to push yourself to embrace the wetness, the dampness, and the cold. Reverend Mitra's first sermon here as our settled minister invited us to step into liquid. I remember that. It was to take the place of the water communion. So in that spirit, I say, come on in. Learn to swim, make it your home, and we just might change the world. Stay wet and stay woke, y'all. That's all I have for you.